Well, I was particularly interested in their relations with the Commonwealth, that is, say, with Cromwell. Why did Cromwell readmit them? One could claim biblical Protestantism has a Judeophile aspects, perfectly true. One could say that Cromwell needed their financial expertise in re-establishing the English economy after the Civil War. But I think it goes deeper than that. Remember, yep. Charles I's court was the most brilliant court in Europe since the Renaissance. He had, in fact, the finest collection of Renaissance paintings in Europe. Now, all of that had to be sold off to finance, retrospectively, the cost of the Civil War. Now, I am certain that the Cromwell's new model army, because it's not an easy thing to overthrow a state, this must have been financed from Holland. And therefore, the way he paid them back was in kind, because he had no money. The readmission of the Jews for the first time from 1290. And since then, they have moved from strength to strength. This was Manasseh ben Israel, who came over at the head of a delegation of Amsterdam Jews. He himself was Portuguese. He was born somewhere, I think, in Lisbon. At the head of a delegation of Sephardi Jews to London. And the odd thing is, and this I've never been able to understand, is why they were not expelled according to the decree of 1290, when the restoration took place in 1660.
Yep.
And because, you know, when with Charles II's first parliament, it was not even necessary to pass a law annulling all the legislation passed under Cromwell, because that legislation was illegal of its nature, because Britain is constitutionally a monarchy, and no decree, no state paper is valid without the signature of the head of state, who happens to be the sovereign. Therefore, it was not necessary to pass an act annulling all the Commonwealth legislation. So how was it these people were suffered to remain? And I could only think that maybe he needed money to prosecute his wars, particularly the war with Holland, which was over the supremacy, maritime supremacy.
Well, there were also promises made later on to control the colonies in the United States, and the Jews had already established themselves as money changers and lenders in the new colonies in the United States.
Are you referring to Benjamin Franklin and his letter to Washington, saying that this should be incorporated in the American Constitution, that the Jews should be banned from immigrating into America?
That's right. And in fact, we see that the result of not having banned them when we came to our own Civil War, when both sides of that Civil War were financed and gamed out of Europe, especially through the Rothschilds, and you'll find that this guy John Wilkes Booth was an actual agent of Rothschild and mysteriously disappeared after murdering Lincoln, but because Lincoln was issuing his own debt to finance his war. But the simple truth of the matter is that these people have never kept their eye off of the prize. Their prize is total and complete domination of our globe, and we're very close to watching that happen today, although their hubris has caused them to be exposed all over the place, and I don't see that they're succeeding in the larger sense. I see there are certain successes they're having in certain areas, but they're not winning the battle, because the battle of public opinion is moving against them, and I see another ultimate fight coming against this group. I'm watching it take shape right now.
Yeah, hubris is the word. I've been studying recently the history of the Templars, and there's no doubt whatever that their fate was hubristic. They controlled so much land, so much property, especially located in the vicinity of rivers, because at that time roads were very primitive, so that at any point they could be poised to take over the country, especially France, the richest and most populous country in Europe in the Middle Ages, the way the Teutonic Knights had taken over what is now Poland and Eastern Europe. So that they brought the wrath of the state down on themselves and were brutally suppressed. So the same could happen with the Jews today. We can view them as the new Templars.
Well, and there are many people who believe that that Templar wealth, well, a lot of it was confiscated by powerful Jewish interests.
But the Templar treasure has never been discovered.
Well, it could have been folded into other wealth.
You mean money laundering?
Well, it could have been folded into the rise of Rothschild, because you note that that toward the end of the Templars' reign, there were powerful Jewish forces through Calvin, and who was a Jew from Switzerland.
Now this is very interesting to me as a Scotsman, because I have always believed that Calvin destroyed Scotland, not intentionally, but through his pupil John Knox, and I think he not only destroyed Scotland, he destroyed Christendom. He destroyed Christianity, because Christianity banned usury. The Catholic Church, for instance, had an embargo on usury right down to 1830. Now, Luther continued that ban. And you know Luther's words on his deathbed were, "Burn down the Jews' synagogues and their schools." I think I can quote you the complete text. I've got it somewhere. And but Calvin, who came just a few years after Luther, he said that the taking of interest is legal.
Well, and isn't it interesting that just prior to the Calvin successes, that we also had the destruction of the Catholic Church through the Jacobins, who also received financing with Jewish money. So
no, this comes later with the Revolution.
That's right.
1789.
That's right.
But we know that the Masons were behind that.
Well, the Jewish Masons, they were there because the Jewish money that flowed into that ended up destroying. See, this Calvin destroyed certain elements of the church's control, and then who comes along after that? But the Huguenot movement, and then we had the Jacobin movement, and one punch after another, we saw the destruction of Catholicism throughout the different countries, especially the most powerful country, France. And ultimately, we were left with a terrible mess. And you can see the history of France descending into utter poverty in the 1810 to the 1900 period. This is when books like Les Misérables were written through with Victor Hugo. He wrote about how miserable the society had become, and this was once the wealthiest nation on earth. And it's interesting that wherever these people do their most awful deeds, horrible poverty seems to visit the public after.
Down to the reign of Louis XV, France was the most prosperous country in Europe. It controlled all the luxury trade through porcelain manufacture, textiles, and everything. It's true that there was great social inequality on which these people, like the Jacobins, fastened for the purpose of their propaganda. But the taxation under the Republic, beginning in 1793, was far worse than anything the taxes that the peasants had been subjected to under the monarchy. And I'm interested you should mention Huguenots, because you see, the Huguenots, like the Presbyterians of our native Scotland, they are Calvinists.
Yes.
So wherever you go, you find this link with money.
That's right. And isn't it interesting,
Calvin
was Jewish.
Banking in France is monopolized by the Jews and the Huguenots.
Well, it was
Frère, for instance.
Isn't it interesting, though, that Calvin was actually Jewish, though? His name was...
Well, that's a revelation to me. I've never read this anywhere.
Yes.
I must examine this further.
Well, let me type it into my search engine here. I think I've got it right on my desktop. You know, James, a lot of this stuff makes sense when you start really investigating it, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I mean, for instance, 2 years ago, a press campaign was mounted against me by the Murdoch Press, beginning with the Sunday Times. Now, that is what is called the quality press. It's distinct from the gutter press in Britain, and they were publishing absolute lies about me, that I had called for the assassination of Tony Blair. I wouldn't be such a fool, although I hate his guts, as to lay myself open to a charge of indictment that could lead to a period of a charge of incitement that could lead to a period of imprisonment. What they had done was they had taken my words and totally distorted them. Now, somebody told me that Murdoch is Mordecai. Only the other day, I received a paper through the post, and it was two pages outlining Murdoch's Jewish connections. His mother was a Jew. The son of a Jewish mother is always a Jew. Murdoch is a top Zionist. He is closely connected with the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League,
yes.
And is one of the principal financial supporters of Israel. So here's the explanation of why poor little obscure James Dickey was the target of a press campaign in Britain 2 years ago.
Well,
you even had the police knocking at my door, saying that the article had been handed to their lawyers for assessment. I said, why don't you ask to hear the tape?
Well, we also, as I was, and I mean, I was run out of South Africa, as you were. They ran me off the air in South Africa, the Jews, and under all kinds of accusations. And you were similarly expelled from the media in South Africa for the same reasons I was.
Well, they tried to close down Radio 786, which is a community radio based in the Cape, on account of an interview given which I did for that radio.
Yeah.
They're still trying to take away its broadcasting license. This is how they muzzle the opposition. You see, they cannot bear truth. The Quran says truth has come and error has vanished. Inna al-batul kana zahukan, because it is in the nature of error to vanish. So their greatest enemy is truth. Expose them by means of historical truth.
Well, you know, one of the things that we're starting to discover is, you know, it's not just Rothschild family money. We had a family named Seligman, a very powerful family in the United States that still holds sway over across America. They were allowed to make billions back in the turn of the last century selling American bonds worldwide. And, of course, the rise of the American juggernaut through World War II was largely a Jewish enterprise. And you'll note that all of the large building projects for weaponry and all of the major fortunes built during this last past century was in Jewish hands. And it's interesting that now they've done away with their country, with the country. Now they're looking for new hosts. They're moving their plants and equipment to China and to India.
In India. Mm-hmm.
And Rothschild actually said over 12 years ago in a speech he gave, if I'm correct about this, I'm going to have to look up the actual speech. But he said that the new money is to be made in India. And this is, he said, I'm moving my operations to India. But you know, a lot of what I see happening now is an attempt to restrict individual liberty globally. See, we've always watched it regionally. You know, we talk about World War II as being a war that encompassed the globe, but when in fact it was pocketed. The entire world didn't suffer through that world war in every large sense. What we're seeing today for the first time, though, is a global restriction of the world, and we're seeing it through the money system coming into fewer and fewer hands. We're seeing it through the food distribution systems getting into smaller and smaller company numbers. And my point is that we truly are seeing it global this time.
What about extraterritorial jurisdiction?
Yes.
You can now be tried in another country for a crime that is not a crime in your own country.
Well, that's what Bishop Williamson.
And they've just pulled this off. Now, you heard that the Czech Republic has announced its adhesion to the common market, the EC, which now is going to have a president, maybe even Blair, who failed as Prime Minister of Britain, to make him president of Europe. Now, that means that common market law will ultimately be applied to Britain. So I could be prosecuted for the things I'm saying at this moment.
Well, that that probably is coming in the future if we don't defeat these people at the truth here. We have to get them out of our lives. So this is an all-or-nothing a bid we're making for freedom. And if we fail at it, low is the day. I mean, it's going to be a terrible state of affairs if the human family cannot come to grips with these facts, James.
Well, the Jew or the Zionist Jew is a parasite, and the basic law of parasitism is that sooner or later the parasite destroys the host. And this is what Hitler himself said. He said, if the Jew triumph, eventually this planet will swim through empty space bereft of life.
Yeah, well, we're heading in that direction, and of course, income distribution in the United States has never been wider. In other words, the wealthiest group, which is almost entirely Jewish connected or Jewish influenced, and the poorest is the widest in history. And the poverty that is erupting in the United States is not dissimilar to what we saw after the fall of the Russian Empire, and the allowing of that country's population to be decimated through starvation and pestilence. We've seen this repeatedly, and we see it at the hands of very, very powerful criminal Jews, and we're watching this happen again in the United States.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. I mean, really, I despaired of the Americans as a nation when I saw the wave of rejoicing at the election of Barack Obama. How naive can a person be to believe that his election will really change anything? A black in the White House is not just a paradox, it's mere tokenism. Every American president is an employee of the giant corporations that control the state.
Well, that's right. But here's the—you know—you mentioned extra control or international control over things, and there's a new thing that's on the horizon: this climate change nonsense that they're putting into action here very soon in Copenhagen, where in American law states that treaty law supersedes the national law. And if a treaty is engaged in by the federal government of the United States, its adherence takes precedence over national law. And what we see now is
That's an abdication of sovereignty to begin with.
It is indeed. And while we've also seen that the ascension of the British Empire into the European Union is against the law because the Queen cannot be subject of any other government.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're doing it with that as well. So we see this happening everywhere against the letter of the law of the nations that are involved in it. They're just ignoring these facts, as they did when Cromwell reinvited the Jews. He was doing it against the law.
Mm-hmm.
So when
the United Nations partitioned Palestine against the will of a two-thirds majority of its inhabitants.
Well, that's right.
It went against the very principles that they had announced at the Atlantic Charter and the foundation of the United Nations in San Francisco. It's because it was dominated by the big powers, and the big powers are themselves dominated by the Jews, by banking interests. The real government of America is the Federal Reserve Board, set up in 1913. If you ask me, the creation of the Federal Reserve Board in 1913 and the outbreak of the First World War in 1914 is not an accident. Now, we were speaking before, how it is wrong to tar all Jews with the same brush. Now, you know, in the First World War, well, in my opinion, only two people come out of that imbecilic conflict, which virtually destroyed European civilization. Only two people come out of it with any credit whatever. One is the Pope. On August the 1st, 1917, he launched an appeal to stop the war. And who was it who told him to shut his mouth? The British. They said, attend to your own business, Mr. Pope. Your business is religion. Keep your nose out of politics. And these are the very same people today who attack Pius XII for not interfering in the Second World War to save the Jews. Now, the other person who comes out of that conflict with some shreds of credit is Henry Ford. Now, as a rule, industrialists, they're only interested in money and profit and the cash nexus and all the rest of it. But no, some of them have a conscience. Now, Ford organized the peace ship. I don't know very much about it. One doesn't find much about it in the histories of the First World War. But the idea was that it would sail across the Atlantic and visit the various countries, because at that time America was still neutral,
mm-hmm.
and try to bring an end to the war, in which millions were getting killed. And do you know that aboard this ship there were two Jews, good Jews, and they went up to Henry Ford one day and they said, Hank, you're wasting your time. I said, what do you mean? They said, don't you realize that by this stage in the war, the Jews have cornered all the raw materials, and this conflict will go on until their appetite for profits have been sated.
Yeah.
And that's what opened his eyes. He went back and he founded the Dearborn Independent and got top academics to write for it, and eventually issued all the articles that they did, thoroughly researched, in three volumes, The International Jew.
I have the entire International Jew on my website.
The whole thing?
The entire, every single thing.
I only have the selection.
No, I have the entire content of the of everything that was written for the International Jew on my website.
Hmm.
Well, you know, James, we're looking at this in very desperate times. We also have seen them moving up late into bioweapons and biology, and you'll note that if you go back to World War One, these same people were very willing to use poison to kill on the battlefield. And if you check back on who manufactured mustard gas and who profited from its manufacture, you'll find it goes back to Jewish interests as well. And then, of course, they profited from World War II, and now they're involved in Baxter International making vaccines and poisoning people. And it looks like we're coming into a nexus of troubled times here. Many things, financial, health, geopolitical, it's just all coming to a head. What is your take on all this scanning the news?
Well, it sounds like an Armageddon scenario, doesn't it?
It does indeed, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we are living in the latter days. I mean, according to the timeline of the universe in Hinduism, this is Kali Yuga, you know. It's the last phase that precedes destruction. And as Kali dances, her dance speeds up, and that accelerates the process of decadence. One can see it everywhere. I mean, you referred to the cinema. Now, the cinema, the film, is the only art form that the 20th century has invented. And it's a very powerful one because it involves all the different senses simultaneously. Audition, for instance, vision, engages all of these simultaneously, and it's been made into a weapon of propaganda for them.
That's right, it has. And I am very pained to see where we're heading as a species, as a human family. And I happen to know that the suffering that has already taken place, and a lot of people have asked me, James, you know, I've made predictions about the fall of our financial structure, and it has already taken place. We're in the process of falling. It doesn't happen in a single Big Bang event. It happens in a slow and continuous slide down, and we are now well on our way down to a place where goodness knows where it'll stop. But suffering is growing, hunger is growing, pestilence is growing, and at the same time anger is growing, and it is an anger to find out why and who did this to us. And yet they are so practiced at propaganda, James, that we often don't get our side heard. But I think for the first time, there are tens of millions of people worldwide that are learning the facts. And I'm give you a little bit of information here about my largest visitor base in a single day is from what country, James? Where do you think I get my most visitors from?
The Far East.
China.
Yes.
I get Chinese visitors as the number one group that visits my website on a daily basis.
They say the Jews will never be able to take over China because they are so distinct, whereas here they can merge with the population and remain unrecognized.
Well, they're coming to learn on my website. It's interesting, when I go to where they're posting the stuff, I have access on my search engine here where all these people are coming from. It's all squiggly lines. I don't know I don't know what the website says because it's all in Chinese. But they're putting up what I'm saying, and it's interesting that India is also a very growing market for my information, as well as other places. And we're up around 10,000 people a day coming to the website, James. So
well, that's amazing. You mean 10,000 people are going to hear this, our conversation, at this moment?
Well, that's right. The first day it's up, that it'll be heard. But over a month's time, there'll be 80,000 people that hear this.
Oh, well. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, James,
in that case, those attempts that they made to muzzle me when I was a university undergraduate, they have failed, and we owe it to the Internet. And what is the Internet? Well, it's just discarded military technology, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it put out by DARPA and the defense agency that has in charge of, you know, they thought, I think when they allowed the Internet to become a public domain, they thought that they would be able to use it as an ultimate manipulative tool of society, where, and in many ways it has become that, but they didn't realize there was an element that would grow from it, that truth would be exposed on many levels. And I think they've made a judgment error here, and I think if now the cat is out of the bag. They can't put the genie back in this bottle, and I'm wondering how far we're going to be able to get before you know, serious degradation worldwide happens, because we're looking at food shortages in our horizon. We're looking at illness coming from probably bioweapons, in my view. But we're looking at some very difficult moments in human history.
Believe me, Darrell, when it comes, it will be far worse than anything ever witnessed before. 1929 will be a vicarage tea party in comparison with this, because the world's population now is three times bigger than it was in 1929. And the rainforests have gone.
And well, not only the size of the population, but the know-how on how to be self-sufficient has lost itself as well. People have left the farms. They don't know how to prepare food for themselves from a garden to the plate. They don't know how to make ends meet as far as being self-sufficient, James. Those skills have become a lost art, and our small farmers are gone. And what's happening is, you know, living in an urban...
Small farmers and the small traders as well. You remember that in the 1950s they staged a comeback in France, the Peugeotists, but then they were denounced as fascists and all the other parties gathered to destroy them.
Well, that's because France is a Zionist-controlled territory.
Oh, I think so. I would say ever since 1789.
Well, you're right, but I mean, full control over the countryside has really taken grip over the last 50 years. But I mean, you know, we can look back on the reign of Queen Victoria and seeing the control of her government through what's his name, Griselli.
Disraeli,
and the fact is he would come in and be all creamy and nice with the Queen, and then he'd head back and do exactly what he wanted to do with the government.
Oh, he was a past master in the art of flattery. You see, she didn't like Gladstone because he was a rather austere evangelical type, but Disraeli, he had mastered the art of flattery, and his letters to Queen Victoria shows just how skilled he was at it.
Well, she turned over full control, especially during her periods of mental illness. I mean, she went through bouts of depression up in Balmoral, where she was unable to take an active role in daily life. And
well, especially after Albert's death, yeah. They were even thinking of abolishing the monarchy because she had withdrawn completely from public life.
Well, that's right, and he was left to run things at will.
Disraeli?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he ensconced himself in the empire, making the entire empire a Jewish connected realm.
Well, and, of course, I mean the lifeline of the British Empire was the Suez Canal, and he bought that with the money lent to him by Rothschild.
Well, there you go. There you go.
See, this was why I think that Germany fought the Second World War along the wrong strategy altogether. The trouble is, Hitler was an Alpine type. He himself admitted it. He said, on land, I am a hero. At sea, I am a coward. And that's the strength of the British. They realize if they can keep the sea lines open, they'll win this war. And they... but, you know, had he, instead of all this business... about Russia and the Ukraine and Lebensraum in the East, had he concentrated on North Africa, he could have snapped the British Empire in two just by taking the Suez Canal and would have been aided by a friendly population, because there was a fascist government in Iraq just waiting for him to enter.
Well, we're left here with what-ifs throughout our history, if you want to look at the facts. We can't allow the present-day events to be seen in the same light 50 years hence, because if we are talking what-ifs, it's going to be the end of a freedom period for all human beings. We're being attacked biologically now. We're being attacked on our genetic code. We're being attacked through manipulation of genes and manipulation of our diet, manipulation of our environment, where we're never going to be able to emerge as free people again. And many people believe that this is our last attempt or our last chance at securing freedom for ourselves. And you know, the American experiment worked so well in its beginnings, but it has fallen victim to these criminals as it has so many times before. We have to resurrect the goals of individual liberty and freedom, along with individual responsibility that came out of that document. It was a marvelous document. I think one of the greatest documents in human history is the American Constitution and the American Bill of Rights. And what we're losing with the death of America is something more than just the enslavement of its people, but the loss of a great ideal. And it has been lost for a long time, but we're seeing it put in the ground, it seems.
Well, don't you think this goes a long way back, possibly to 1864 and the defeat of the South in the Civil War?
Absolutely it does. And then what we see is of course, the bankers setting up. And we've lost the sovereignty of the country back all the way back till then. But in its early part of America, you know, there were no taxes. Everybody was responsible to secure their own living and secure their own freedoms and be responsible as citizens. Now, of course, there were abuses and problems, but the idea that it founded was really an excellent way to live a life. We don't see that anywhere else on the globe today. It doesn't exist anymore. And sadly, it may not ever exist again if we don't win this battle, James.
You mean there were basic freedoms guaranteed by the Constitution?
That's right. And in fact, those freedoms came with responsibility. But what you got for it was truly a free life. And if you adhere to them and worked, the way it was designed, if you read that document, you know, they took the best ideas from Montesquieu and from the Magna Carta, and they amalgamated a wonderful ideal that secured individual rights and freedoms along with individual responsibility that has never been met or matched since or before. And what we're losing now is the greatest achievement of geopolitics and humankind.
Well, that's what Ezra Pound said.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ezra Pound didn't miss a beat, you know, in spite of them saying he was crazy and put him away for it.
Oh, that was just to discredit his ideas. See, they are such hypocrites, these people, ruling class. They attack Russia for putting her intelligentsia into mental homes, but they were the first to do so with Ezra Pound.
Yes, that's right. Oh, well, we've reached our end of our hour. I want to give you an opportunity to make parting statements here to the listening audience. And again, we're going to be heard worldwide in societies throughout the globe. And you have an opportunity here to speak to them once again, James.
Well, it's just this. As a student of history, I am impressed by the fluctuations, you know, by the rise and fall of civilizations. Now, I understand that Karl Marx recommended his students study the emergence of the British labor movement. My advice to our listeners is study history, because from it we can learn lessons that apply to the present. He who controls the present controls the future, and we must prevent these people running away with our world.
I agree with that 100%, James. And again, you know, I invite you back regularly, because every time we talk, it's a wonderful give and take between us. I've done my research, and you, of course, have done yours. And so there's so much to chew through when we do a show. So I'm thanking you from the bottom of my heart for coming on The French Connection. And I hope to have you on again, my friend.
Well, I love to hear anything from France. It's one of my favorite countries. For centuries, it was the very focus and cynosure of European civilization. And I still hope that someday it may become a great nation again.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is my friend, Yaakov Zaki, James Dickey, my program is done for today. It's my late afternoon Saturday here for me. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Until the next time, take care of your families. Strange times and powerful forces are moving in our world. Make sure your families are cared for. And until the next time, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please be well. Bye-bye now.